Last night, I spoke about the importance of will, willpower, determination. In the Zendo, it's quite a solid, still, not a lot of moving, still, solid, silent Zendo. It is a very good tone. But perhaps many of you have already seen the limit of that willpower, that determination. As important as it is, especially in the beginning, to keep us on the cushion, working, returning, perhaps getting lost, returning again, patiently, calmly, returning to the present practice. Eventually, especially now, during a retreat, a day or two perhaps, you will see that, we might say, the results of this effort, determination, and willpower, after a while, it becomes as if something is going on of its own power, its own momentum. You don't need to push anymore. It is bringing you with it. Do you follow? If you haven't already experienced it, probably within the next day or two, you will know, oh, this is what he was talking about. It is an important point in the practice, in a sense, moving beyond the mere effort of the will, much of which might have been actually kind of fighting with yourself, struggling with yourself, your thoughts, your emotions, and whatnot, right? Even your determination. Do I have enough? But eventually, something else takes hold, and it becomes the effortless, constant, sustained practice that I spoke about last night becomes apparent, becomes manifest. This is good, but it's important to continue to practice, in a sense, even harder at that point. Not to say, oh, wow, it's like floating on a cloud. No, that, in a sense, is the entrance into a deeper practice. So when you start to see that, we might say the fruits of your efforts result in a kind of effortlessness. There's still pain, perhaps, you're still sleepy, but somehow it moves on of its own accord. Good. There it is. You see clearly you are going in the right direction. But continue on. Don't turn that into something. Simply continue on. Please do not get trapped by the front gate, so to speak. It's very tempting when you get to, so to speak, the entrance gate. Wow, it's here, it's beautiful, look at that. And you just want to admire the entrance gate. But of course, the point is to be able to go through that gate, and then be of service to others. Is that clear? So whether you've gotten there or not doesn't matter. When you do, just continue on through. Just continue on through. It's a different kind of practice. You're no longer fighting with yourself. It's wonderful. You won't be sleepy, or not nearly as sleepy as before, because that's the real tiredness, right? You'll see. The real exhausting part of the practice is banging against yourself. But when finally that is let go, all of that wasted energy now is right here, effortlessly. So the practice is much more stable, much stronger. But it's not something to dwell in, to stop. You simply continue on in that practice. If it's not clear, if you get stuck, that's one reason we have one-on-one, okay? Well, I brought up, is it okay? Do you understand? Okay. I brought up a number of famous Zen masters and their questions last night. I mentioned Layman Pang and his question, a little difficult to put simply in English, but something like, who is the one that doesn't accompany, doesn't get carried away with all things? I also mentioned the Japanese Zen master Bankei, who got stuck with that statement from the Confucian teachings. Great learning, simply put, wisdom. Wisdom is found, lies in illuminating, making clear our own innate, inborn, inherent virtue. Goodness. What is that? Where is that? That was his great question, his great doubt. I also mentioned the example of Rinzai, the founder of Rinzai Zen. He was a little bit later in time than Layman Pang, 1150 years ago. I mentioned that in a sense he didn't really have his own question, as it states in the record of Rinzai. When he was asked, he said, I don't know what to ask. We might say that was his great question, but it's not because, well, I'm just kind of hanging out and waiting to get my, you know, priestly certificate so I can, you know, have a temple and make a living. No, he was so deeply into it that he couldn't even ask a question. He couldn't formulate it as one thing. Different people, different characters, they were all practicing the Dharma completely. Sometimes it comes up as a very precise question. Good. Sometimes it does not. Good. There are ways to practice to bring that to fruition, to completion. In some cases, it depends on the person, where they are in the practice. It can be very helpful to have a kind of anchor. What's that in German?
Anker.
Hey, I'm learning German. An anchor to keep us going in the right direction. And in a sense, we can say a set traditional koan case can play that role as an anchor if we ourselves still find ourselves kind of going back and forth by the waves, huh? This wave and then that wave. So that anchor can help in that way. Ideally, we have our own, we are our own anchor. But sometimes, practically speaking, it can be of help to borrow an anchor. That isn't very simply how and why Koan Zen developed. Sometimes people didn't have their anchor. And at a certain point, it can be very helpful. So again, a traditional koan, a set case, somebody else's problem, can be very helpful for you if you make it your own. I did not, last night, talk about the answer, so to speak, that Layman Pang came to. I did not mention the answer that Rinzai came to, or that Bonke came to. Do you see why?
The kind of fight that we will fight our own answer.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't need their answer. In a sense, you don't even need their question, except insofar as it helps you to see the direction that you must go. Exactly. Why don't I tell you about my own experience, my own answer? Wouldn't that be impressive? We could even get it on record here, you know? Why? Precisely. Because any answer, my answer, Gautama Buddha's answer, Rinzai's answer, anybody's answer can get in the way of your own question. And that is the most important thing. That is the only place that your answer can come from, by penetrating to the bottom of your question, the question that you are. It is essential in Zen to see through. This is one way of describing the essential point of Zen practice. Not just to see, or to see calmly, or even to see clearly, but to see through. What do I have to see through, you might say? Anything will do, as long as you take it all the way. And if you do take it all the way, when that point becomes clear, it all becomes clear and alive, and you are able to work with it and use it for the benefit of others. Do you see? Is it clear? Whatever it is, even if it's not, as with the case of Rinzai, a specific question. Oh, I don't have a question. Could you please give me a question? You don't really even need that. Because if you simply give yourself completely in your moment-to-moment practice, that itself is called the Genjo Koan. That is, the koan manifest right here and now. It can be resolved that way. In a sense, practically speaking, that's rather difficult. Can you see why the Genjo Koan is rather difficult? Because especially in the beginning, the contents of your consciousness are changing so much. You see? So at this moment, maybe you have some very, very solid presence and awareness, and you feel it's very, very, it's like a block right there. But then 5 minutes later, it's gone and you're thinking about what you ate yesterday. Do you see? That's okay. What you ate yesterday can also be the entrance. But if you simply go over the waves, you see, it must be anchored. The Genjo Koan doesn't simply mean, oh, now I'm aware, you know, I'm sitting here and now I picture my sister. Hello. Now that's gone. Now I see some food. Now I have a memory. That is not Zazen. Why? Because we are separate from what we are experiencing. But that very same experience, if we are one with it, will do. Do you see? You don't need another experience. Okay? You don't need even a deeper experience. You just need to be totally unified with your present experience. That's the real Genjo Koan. As I said last night, whether it's intense pain in the knee, that's fine, that'll do, or a tremendous euphoria and bliss, if that is what you are actually experiencing. The point is not to separate from it, to be so totally that there is no person experiencing it and there is no thing experienced. It is simply, if it's pain, ah! Or if it's joy, perhaps just a bit of a smile on the face. But being totally that. Once again, in a sense, that Genjo Koan, the koan of manifest here and now, is difficult. It's the most demanding because it must be anchored. It can't just be the momentary awareness that arises and then ceases, and you become enamored with that. You back away a little from that. You see? You judge this. That is not the Genjo Koan. So once again, this is why it can be helpful to have an anchor. That is where a specific koan, someone else's problem, to use to anchor your own. It's not necessary, but it can help. Ideally, we all are our own great koan, our own great doubt. So the purest way would be simply to do with that, nothing else. You don't need a thing. But that takes great care, great patience, great diligence. Just sitting itself, you probably all are familiar, Soto Zen, not Rinzai Zen, the other major school. Soto Zen talks very, very highly of just sitting, only sitting. Why? Because in a sense, that is, of course, the Genjo Koan. While you're sitting, what is it to just sit? Right there, the answer is manifest. If it is truly just, you see, only so we may say, well, he doesn't give his own answer. And we already know why. But then again, perhaps the answer is being given in every word, in every action, and in every thought. Let me give a simple example to help you. It's been about a half an hour. Would you like to stand up and stretch for a moment first? Please feel free. To help you get a better sense, a taste of this, let me give a kind of example, analogy, metaphor. Let's say you just broke up with your loved one. But at this moment, you're not thinking about that at all. You're maybe going to work and you turn on the radio, or you happen to go into a bar and you hear the music playing. And it's one of those songs, maybe a love song, perhaps one that you used to listen to with your loved one who now is gone. You, I think, all have experienced that, right? You're not even thinking about her or him at that moment. But you open the door, that melody, that refrain comes in and it goes right in and it just pulls everything out of you. Does anybody not know what I'm talking about? Okay. In a sense, this is exactly what a koan does. But we're not just talking about sentiment, emotion. Perhaps great music is not just talking about that either, but maybe a pop song is. So a very sad or a love song that opens that up and draws all of that out. Right? You know what I mean. In 30 seconds, you can be standing there in the bar or in your car with the radio on crying, right? About something that you weren't even thinking of 30 seconds ago. But it just, and just pulls everything out. Well, we can say in a sense, that's precisely what a koan, when it really becomes ours, that's what it does. And not just emotions or sentiments or memories or longings or even joys. Sometimes you may hear music and you will feel elated, right? Wondrous. It's not just sadness. But with a koan, it's opening up and everything, in a sense, pours out. Do you see? In a sense, that's what a real, when it's living, not just something you repeat. You know, a silly song sometimes you hear on the radio. You don't even like the song. You think, what a stupid song. But guess what? 30 minutes later in the office, you find yourself humming it, or it's going on in your brain, right? Very strange, right? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the song that goes and pulls everything out. Is it clear? Okay. When a koan doesn't work, it can become like that little silly jingle, right, that doesn't mean anything, but you can't get it out of your head. And once again, it's a metaphor. It has its limits. We're not just talking about bringing out, you know, wanting, oh, now let's go to one-on-one and cry about something. That's not what we're talking about. Or laugh about something. Pulling everything out and seeing what is there. What's left? Who is the one that does not accompany the 10,000 dharmas? It's not so different from Layman Pang's question. He wasn't talking about pop songs, but I suppose they didn't have them in China 1,200 years ago. But you see, it's not so different, huh? The Genjo koan, in a sense, is that. A bird singing and pulling everything out of you, if that is the experience of the moment. The pain in your knee, if that is the present experience. Or a traditional koan like Joshu's moo. Does this dog have Buddha nature or not? Joshu said moo. Nope. 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 Moo. Just being that moo. Or the other common basic koan, the sound of the single hand. It is nothing other than what I am describing. Show me your original face before your parents were born. In other words, before anything, before there is a you and a me, before a before and after. That's, of course, the real right here. We're not talking about a long ago. Show me your original face when everything has been exhausted. Or very simply, what is this? Or who are you? Not all the stuff you're pulling out. Who are you? Or, I believe Olaf mentioned in the go-around, what is lacking? Right here, right now, be it the pain in your leg or intense joy, what is lacking, missing? What do I still seek for? What do I still need? What is lacking? To once make any of those questions our own and have it resolved, that very simply is the point of Zen practice. It doesn't have to be a formulated koan. Once again, please don't forget, these koans, almost all of them, came out of a person's great question, Layman Pang. That was his living, breathing, had to be answered question. Do you see? Rinzai, the father of Rinzai Zen, challenges you. At one point in his record, he says, he's explaining basically the same thing, although he's not talking about pop music. But then he says to his monks assembled there, why can't you see this? He's talking at this point about what he calls genuine insight. Very simply, seeing through. You must see through now. Why can't you? Why can't you? Here we have a bit of a problem with translation. All of the translations of the record of Rinzai translated as something like, because you lack faith in yourself. Big problem here. First of all, trust is a better word than faith. And second of all, he's not really saying in oneself. He's saying because you lack trust in what is. Do you see? Because you don't trust reality. We don't have to have faith in someone or something, certainly not some kind of a god out there. But Rinzai is not saying, just have faith in yourself, huh? No, of course not. He's saying, have trust in what is. If you do that, you can't go wrong. You see? You don't have to make things up. You don't have to imagine. You don't even have to believe. Just get to the bottom of your actual experience. And if you can't do that, as Rinzai in a sense challenges, you see, it's simply because you at this point lack enough, don't have enough trust in what actually is. So what do you do? Well, by sitting through, what is becomes manifest. So even to say trust, still there's a problem there. But as you go on in your practice and you taste it and you see it for yourself, naturally, trust grows. Even to say trust, you know, you've tasted it, you've seen it. And so you're able to go on. Once again, be careful with these Zen records and Buddhist records too when you read them. It's so easy to misunderstand. Rinzai is not saying simply, go ahead, have faith in yourself. You can do it. He's saying something even more fundamental. Just trust in what really is. So even if it's frightening for you at a certain point, it's okay. Because we're not going to some strange place. We are returning to reality, to what really is. We are getting out of the dreams and delusions, letting them dissolve of themselves, and seeing simply what really is. How can we not trust that? He is Rinzai, so he also says stuff like, if you continue to lack a root of faith, interesting expression, a root of trust or faith, but in practice, it will be clear, it will be obvious. If you lack this root of trust, a final day will never come. He's very decisive. He's challenging you. Not to be moved, to be carried away by what I called last night the passing fancies, the momentary inclinations. Not that they're bad or wrong or evil, but to once see through where all of that actually comes from. To see the source of the dis-ease. Not only to have the prescription in your hand, but to then take the medicine. And then experience the unborn, undying wholeness that you are, that all things are. In a very practical way, for those of you who are still struggling, this is a precious opportunity, this retreat. Let me give you a simple, practical way to help unify your practice. We chanted the vow, the four vows, right? We did it in Japanese, and then we did it in a kind of long English literal translation, and then at the bottom, it was more of a trying to get at the real meaning, something like, numberless beings set free, endless delusion let go, countless dharma see through, peerless way manifest. To put that all into one phrase and to vow that can be very, very helpful. For example, for you, not to do it to someone else, but to do it for yourself. I vow here and now and for the rest of my life to walk the Buddha way, to walk the way of awakening to the very end. To do this, I realize I must devote my life to it without regret or reservation. Needless to say, this doesn't mean you have to give up your wife or your husband or your family. Not at all. This should be a way to really embrace your loved ones. But to do it as a part of the way of your practice. So once again, if you wish for yourself to vow here and now at this retreat and for the rest of your life to pursue, to walk, not just sit, but walk the Buddha way to the very end. It's also very important, practically speaking, to live a wholesome life. When I say wholesome, I mean healthy, both for yourself and for others. Moral, honest, not hurting yourself or others. By living a life like that, your life of practice is that much easier and that much natural. If you're living a life where you're hurting others or hurting yourself, it's going to be very difficult to really sit on the cushion and do what you have to do. You will be conflicted. So it sounds obvious, and yet some people don't get it. Perhaps they think, well, once I get enlightened, then I'll be good, right? So I don't have to be so good now, right? No. First things first. If you're not living a healthy and a wholesome life, real practice is impossible. So let the two work together. By leading a good life, the practice becomes just that much more clear and obvious and simple. And then naturally, as a result, you will live an even more wholesome life, both for yourself and for others. I've talked a little bit about Dogen. Let me introduce a little bit of, Rinzai. I mentioned Rinzai many times. I mentioned Dogen just briefly, but he actually has a chapter, the first chapter of his classic Shobo Genzo, it's called, is called the Genjo Koan, the Koan Manifest Here and Now. And in that chapter, he says, when the Dharma, that means truth or reality, when Dharma, truth, reality, is not fully realized in body and mind, you think it's already sufficient enough. Can you understand? When the Dharma, truth, reality, is not fully realized in body and mind, when you're still struggling, you may think it's already enough. Right? We have those experiences. I've got it. This is it. I have no more to do. It's complete. Then he says, when Dharma, truth, is fully present in body and mind, there seems to be something missing. Do you understand? That something missing is very different than the ordinary self feeling something is missing, feeling a lack. This is the real wondrous lack. Once again, when the Dharma, when truth and reality in our practice is not fully realized in body and mind, you think it is enough. Or you may think it is enough. You will get to that point, perhaps, in your practice. Yes! Got it! Then he says, however, when the Dharma is fully present in body and mind, I would put it, you see what is missing. And this is a very positive thing. It's not, oh, but I still feel a little... No, it's not the lack of the self at all. What is it? This is how I would put it. When you're filled with the Dharma, in American English, we speak of filled to the brim, like a cup, you know, all the way to the brim, to the top. When you're filled to the brim, to the very tip, when you're full with the Dharma, nothing is missing. Nothing is missing. You feel nothing is lacking. I'm complete. My work is finished. When it overflows, when your cup runneth over, when it overflows, we realize what's missing. And needless to say, the second is much more important than the first. The first is still an illusion. Once again, to rephrase Dogen, filled when you in your experience are filled with the Dharma, you will naturally feel, there's nothing missing, nothing lacking. I'm complete. My work is finished. Hallelujah! You're not yet there. When it overflows, we realize what still needs to be done. Do you see? There's nowhere to get stuck then. That's a very positive realizing what is missing. Do you see? That is compassion at work. Perhaps tomorrow I will give you some examples from Rinzai. He says this in a very different way. But he's saying the same thing. But I wanted to start today with Dogen. It's a little gentler. Rinzai tomorrow may knock your socks off, but I trust you will be ready for that. It's almost 5 of. We are supposed to end at 11. Is that right? Yeah, and have Kinhin. Does anyone have an immediate question or concern? We have a few minutes. Please feel free to ask it here or where you are.
I didn't get the meaning of the sentence of Dogen. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
You repeated it 3 times.
Do you think reading it again would help, or is it something you just got to sit with?
Yeah, maybe.
Do you want me to read it again just to make sure at least you've got the...
Yeah, okay.
I'd hate you to have a great enlightenment about the wrong phrase, huh? That's not what he said at all. So this is my own translation of Dogen, but it's pretty accurate, I think. When the Dharma is not fully realized in body and mind, you think it's already sufficient enough. When Dharma is fully present in body and mind, there seems to be some insufficiency. Something seems to be lacking. Okay. Or again, in my expression, a little different. When you're filled to the brim with Dharma, nothing is missing.